Hey everyone, welcome back to Things You Learn in Therapy. I am your host, Dr. Beth Trammell, licensed psychologist and associate professor of psychology at Indiana University East, where I'm also the director of the Master's in Mental Health Counseling program. And I really love talking all things therapy. And so I feel so lucky to have so many amazing guests join and also want to talk therapy so that we can kind of share both strategies that we use as clinicians for fellow clinicians, whether you're a new clinician or you are even a veteran clinician. My hope is that you'll find something here. But more than that, we also wanted to share strategies and tips for folks who may be struggling with anything related to mental health. And today, my guest, Tatiana Rojas, is here. She's a licensed marriage and family therapist, and she's going to talk to us about a couple of really great things. One being when therapists need their own therapy. And all that goes into that. Should a therapist be in therapy themselves? We know the power, but it's sometimes hard. We're gonna dissect all of that. And then we're also gonna talk about boundaries today, because I think boundaries is something that we kind of hear a lot about, we talk a lot about, we know we need to do it, but sometimes it's just hard to do. So Tatiana, we've got a lot to talk about. Welcome to the show. Tell us a little bit about you and tell us one fun thing about you.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for having me. I'm really appreciative of the opportunity. So one fun thing about me, I take the marriage and marriage and family therapist very seriously, and I actually married both of my younger sisters and performed their ceremonies.
Oh my gosh.
Definitely something a little bit different, but definitely an enjoyable experience. Also very emotional, but so it's just one fun thing about me.
That's great. Okay. And so you're on the West Coast too, right?
That's correct. I am in LA County. So that is where I predominantly work and practice.
And most of your practice is couples, families. What's the most of what you do?
So I have a lot of experience working with children and adolescents within family dynamics. I've worked within LA County Department of Mental Health with a lot of community-based agencies, and I am approaching a wonderful opportunity of launching a private practice so I can really target working with adults. So that will kind of be coming down the pipeline here with probably within the next month or so. So I'm really excited about that.
That's great. And maybe by the time this has aired, you will already be seeing some clients.
Yes, that is the hope. That would be great. Yeah.
Okay. So when, you and I had first connected about, what are things you learn in therapy that you're particularly interested in or passionate about? And there were lots of things that I think we kind of thought we could talk about. But one topic that I think comes up a lot, both for clinicians and frankly, even from the client perspective, right? Do clients want their therapist to be in therapy? Or do clients see that as, well, if my therapist doesn't have it together, how are they going to help me? Right? I think those are kind of both sides of the fence here about this issue around should therapists be in therapy themselves. So Tatiana, tell us what we might want to know here.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's kind of one of those questions it's one of the things that goes a little bit unanswered sometimes, or a little bit is often wondered is my therapist seeing another therapist? And I've seen some things about there. My therapist has a therapist, so that's my grand therapist, right? And that's kind of the funny part of it. But I think it's so valuable and it's so beneficial when you're starting out in this field to do some professional development when it comes to that component and that piece. And I will just speak from personal experience of definitely saying that joining at the time it was a process group and in a group therapy setting not only helped me process my own stuff as I was kind of going through a master's program, but really, really helped me kind of connect a lot of dots when it came to the professional piece and that component. And the benefits that I had is I did a lot of therapy with other individuals that were actually in the process of getting licensed as well. So we had a lot of these different dynamics of really kind of questioning, like, is this going to work out for me? Is this going to be a good fit? And really kind of putting some of those fears out there, but at the same time, working on ourselves in such a way that we would be better clinicians for our clients. And it was so powerful and so valuable. There's a lot of things I've taken from that and a lot of different aspects that have I've been able to intertwine into who I am as a clinician when I walk into the room. So there really shouldn't be any fear within that. It can be scary, sure. We definitely don't want to invalidate that emotion. But at the same time, it can be so exciting and so rewarding and so valuable as you continue to grow. So, I mean, doctors have doctors, dentists have dentists. So there's no reason why a mental health professional, you can't seek out that assistance. And I think we're seeing a lot more discussions about mental health and trying to destigmatize that. So you're seeing also a lot of other people talking about it. So I think it's also really important for other therapists to be able to share their experiences if they so desire. And I'm just, going to be honest about mine. And I find it really, really valuable. And especially as you go through different stages as well in your life, where I started off in a master's program. I was single. I was, trying to navigate life in California, which can be very expensive, can be very fast paced, lots of different dynamics. Then I was able to get married. I had a child. So those are all also different things and life milestones and that also need processing with, because you also just never know what your client's going to come up with when they walk into a session or what their experiences are going to be. So it's also another way to really work on some of those pieces for yourself professionally, but also, personally, of course. So.
Yeah. I recorded another episode earlier this week about EMDR, and we were kind of talking about the same thing, that as therapists, we don't necessarily always know what the client is going to come in with, and it would be silly for us to think that we wouldn't have, things that come up for us personally that are outside of what you use therapeutically. Right. Because I think there's real value, right? Therapists are still humans. And I think having a human response to what's happening in the therapy room is an important part of doing therapy. Right. But there's also this stuff that comes that's beyond that. Mm-hmm. Right. So that's the part that for me is like, yeah, we have to make sure that we're the best version of ourselves when we show up, and that we kind of clean out as much of the closet as we can, kind of the proverbial closet, I guess, so that when things come up that we don't know about, we don't inadvertently spill the stuff, right?
Yeah, definitely. You're as a clinician, as a therapist in a room, you're trying to take into account everything while still recognizing maybe your limit to being able to process to help whomever is, whatever situation has come in the door. Because yeah, sometimes you just don't know what's going on for that client during that week, what they've experienced, what their difficulties have been, what their struggles, what their wins have even been too. And sometimes can be a little, as a clinician, it can be a little difficult to process that at times, but there's power in being able to make sure you set that time aside and you go see somebody professionally to be able to help deal with those and process those. I know we talk a lot in a lot of different ways about countertransference when we're in supervision, but once you kind of get past a clinical supervision aspect and maybe you're licensed, you don't have all of that, therapy is the next best place to be able to kind of really work through a lot of those pieces. And so it's really, really just important that you have I don't even know if the strength is the right word, but to recognize just within the awareness within yourself to know, how to deal with those instances that come up. And I will say that at times, and what I have learned though, is that there's also the ability to bring in your genuine and authentic self. I think a lot of times we're not sure as clinicians if we should be overly stoic and supportive and not show emotion. My therapist has shown emotion, which allowed me to actually really deep dive into mine and be okay, because for so long it wasn't. So whether that's tears or anger or raising his voice, not in a bad way, but definitely allowed for me as a client to be like, oh, that's totally acceptable. That's okay. That was more powerful than if someone just to kind of try to keep it together. And I would never have learned that.
The power of genuineness. Right. I mean, I think it's an important thing for people to hear that, therapists, we get trained to kind of compartmentalize, right? Where we come in and we kind of have to put certain things kind of on a shelf, our own kind of struggle, maybe what happened that morning for us personally. But I think you're right. There is this this nuance of, yeah, we have to put that up on a shelf, but that doesn't mean that we don't show any emotion, that we don't have any human interaction or reaction. Because I think that is the thing that gives clients permission to kind of do the same thing. I think you're absolutely right.
Yeah. It's a very powerful tool.
Yeah.
As I guess we would say on the clinician side, but for a client, it's just allowing them to be them, their true genuine selves, and to really talk about things that they don't get to talk about potentially outside of whatever walls you have, or if you're doing telehealth or whatever that might look like at that time. It gives them that safe space to be able to do that. And I think that's why it's so important and valuable, because sometimes we don't have those types of relationships also on the outside. There's different reasons why we got into the field. There's different reasons why we've become therapists. And a lot of that has to do with a lot of wounds that need healing. A lot of things that, you know, get brought into that part of it that I think we look for understanding in. And I think there's no better way to do that than if you're actually able to do that in a room with someone else that has that training too. So super, super valuable.
I actually really love what you said earlier. And I think it's worth kind of coming back to, both for, you know, the person who may be a client listening and for the person who may be a clinician listening, that therapists seek counseling just like everybody else. They seek counseling for either personal development or professional development. Mm-hmm. Right. And I think that's true for clients too, right? I think they may come in and say, I just want to learn more about who I am. I want to be better at my job and I want to kind of learn more about who I am. But I think when we talk about those therapists who are seeking their own therapy because, hey, I've had some really hard clients lately and it's bringing up things that, you know, I'm not being the best version of myself. I think it's important for everybody to remember that we use therapy as both a personal development tool and a professional development tool.
Yeah, it's very, very vital and valuable. There's things that you'll learn in a room with a therapist that you might not learn in a training.
Yeah.
It doesn't get practiced in that way. And then it's a whole nother light bulb that goes off and goes, oh, I see what you did there.
Yeah.
I see what happened. And I find that very, very helpful in the work that I do. When it comes to various issues and things that pop up, you know, and especially, like I mentioned, as you go through different milestones in life too, you're like, oh, that's how I'm supposed to just engage in a healthy relationship.
Yeah.
And healthy relationships, I think, are something that we all strive to have.
Yeah.
And sometimes you don't even recognize what maybe can be unhealthy or toxic in your life that you didn't recognize until you walked in and had a conversation with your therapist.
Okay. So this is the very best way to transition, because you're talking about healthy relationships, right? And we all want healthy relationships. And even as therapists, we have to like really be intentional about that. And a big part of healthy relationships is knowing when and how to set appropriate boundaries. And so I really want to, you know, I really want to dig into this a little bit, because I've talked with, you know, various folks, both, you know, in the therapy room, just overhearing things that you just hear about boundaries, you know, it's like, well, I've just got to set a boundary. And I set a boundary and I deleted them and I'm never talking to them again. It's like, okay, well, that might be, you know, that might be a boundary, right? Like cutting someone off and having them not be a part of your life anymore may be a boundary. Maybe. But I think those boundaries are maybe not as hard as some of the other boundaries that I think we're going to talk about, that this is a person who I still want to have in my life, or who I, frankly, I have to have in my life, but this relationship isn't working for me now. So let's start with what would be happening for a person that you in the therapy room would say, oh, it sounds like it's time to set a boundary. What would be a trigger, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, how long can we talk about triggers for boundaries? Like, oh my goodness, there's just so many. I think the biggest one that comes up for me just right off the top of my head is just work.
Yeah.
Right. There's a lot of expectations within many, many fields where you have to kind of be productive. You have to show, you know, that you're completing tasks and that you're kind of getting through and churning things out. And so I think it's really important, you know, as you kind of take a step back, you take a step back and you kind of look at, well, what's, how tired am I? How mentally exhausted am I? How physically exhausted am I? Because even if you're not doing a physically demanding job, emotionally and what you're putting into having to focus and maintain and being in another like Zoom meeting or Teams meeting, that's still exhausting to try and kind of hold all of that. And is that something that's really working for you? Or do you need to take a step back and say, that's a little too much. Maybe I need to have a conversation with my supervisor and let's kind of have a discussion about, you know, the fact that I've been a part of jobs where you just have so many meetings that you can't even get the work done that you need to do for your meetings. Yeah. That you're having a follow-up on like next week. You're like, I don't understand why I'm supposed to have that time. So it's recognizing that, how am I supposed to do all of this? And then having a conversation.
Yeah.
Saying that, and help me, but sometimes it's help me problem solve.
Yeah.
Where I can figure out how to make this work. And then recognizing, yeah, that's not going to work for me to continue to work past certain hours. There have been times where you just definitely need to say my cutoff is 5 p.m. I'm not going to look at my phone. I'm not going to check my emails. I'm going to turn off the computer and I will come back to this at 8 a.m. the next morning or whatever I'm supposed to clock in or log in, whatever that might look like, because there's just no way I can continue to do this and feel like I'm helping myself. And I think we're seeing a lot more of this because we have a lot more also work from home, yeah, remote jobs that are happening right now. So I know this has been a huge struggle for a lot of people. I know it's coming up a lot. And that's one of the biggest things that I'm just hearing about more and more is now this is kind of going to be a little bit more commonplace, it seems like.
Yep.
So now we really have to explore, how do we have a boundary with our work? And that might look like I'm making sure that I'm setting up a specific space in my home and that is only my workspace. I know some people have used their rooms like that they sleep in, and that makes it difficult. So maybe having to adjust and pivot, having a specific identified zone where that's all that I do the work and that's it. Like that doesn't filter into other areas of my home, because it can't. Otherwise, it's just everything's melding together all the time. You know, and that's one example I can think of, at least when it comes, you know, to work specifically.
I think those are great. And I think it's such a good reminder, right? That, so what I heard you saying is, okay, so the trigger is probably I'm exhausted, right? So if you're a person who is like, I'm exhausted, I feel like I'm tired all the time, then it may be time to set a boundary. And I think there's this misconception that boundaries mean I have to go to my boss or my supervisor and I have to tell them that I'm not working after 5 and it's going to be this big conflictual thing. But I think what I hear and what I agree with is there's two kinds of boundaries we can set. One is a self boundary, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm going to have a dedicated space for my office because I know I focus better. I'm going to turn off notifications. You know, what I do personally is I turn my phone to focus where it doesn't send me notifications. I don't get phone calls between the hours of like 8 and 3. It just gives me, that's my self boundary, right? I'm saying this is what's going to help me be more productive, be more focused, whatever it is. But then I think the other thing I hear you saying is that beyond those self boundaries, it's also other, right? It is having a conversation with your supervisor, but it doesn't have to be conflictual. I think what I heard you say is that it's, you know, you can say, hey, can you help me try to make this work? I feel this pressure to be available until 8 p.m. And your supervisor may say to you, I would never think that. Or, you know, clarifying those boundaries. One thing for me that I've been doing in light of a lot of Zoom meetings is I've started asking people if we can do a phone meeting. So if I don't have to see, you know, kind of any documents we're sharing together, I ask, can we do a phone meeting so I can kind of walk around my house or take a walk outside? I can put you in my earbuds and kind of do all the same stuff, because I was realizing by the end of the day, I was getting so tired of just kind of sitting and I wasn't moving, right? So that's a boundary, right? Just asking someone, hey, can we have phone instead of Zoom? That's a boundary.
Yeah, well, and really what you're kind of sharing is it's communication.
Yeah.
It's communication about where I'm at, what my experience is in this moment, and how can we work together to kind of resolve that in a way that's going to be beneficial for both of us, that I get my need met, you get your need met, and we're able to kind of move forward.
That's right.
And whatever that might look like. And that definitely stems throughout many, many, many areas of life, whether it's work, family, relationships. And sometimes, I'll just speak from my experience, it's being vulnerable, yeah. and having to say, this is where I'm at. And that can be really, really hard.
Yeah.
And there's nothing to say that can't be overcome, but it is really hard at times when you're also so overwhelmed and so overworked, or so just things feel out of control. It's hard to kind of take a step back and recognize that. But it is really important that you identify what your needs are, and that helps you set up your boundaries, what your limits are. And that helps you set up your boundaries and your limits with other people in different areas of your life.
I think that's great. Okay. So I want to move to probably the harder one, which is relationships. And maybe let's do family relationships, right? Because I think those can tend to be among the hardest. I think friends or, you know, romantic partners may be another challenge. You know, we mentioned before, yeah, so here's my boundary. It gets your needs met. It gets my needs met. And, you know, everybody's kind of happy. Those are probably easy boundaries, right? When I can have the person still get their need. But setting a boundary sometimes means I get my needs met and the other person doesn't necessarily get what they want. It may not be about needs there, but it may just be they don't get what they want. Mm-hmm. That is where it gets hard. So let's use an example of, you know, you've got a family get together coming up, let's say, or, you know, some sort of event with your family. Let's talk about some boundaries there. How do we do boundaries well with family, especially when the actual need being met may not end up being equal?
Yeah, that is a great example. That is a great scenario that a lot of people can identify with. And I know for me, and maybe this is just the way that my brain works, is, and I don't know if it's more of a type A type thing if we want to go there, but definitely need to know, what are the details? How long am I going to be there? What is the expectation in my involvement in this event? Whatever, if it's a holiday, am I bringing something? Am I having to dress up? Like, I need those details, first of all, because I need to know how to prepare.
Yes.
In that respect, I need to know kind of where I'm going to be at in those moments, for myself, but for my family too. I need to know, I have a toddler, so we've got to deal with and contend with nap time, feeding schedules, and these change, right? As you kind of go through these different milestones, it goes from, it's just me and my husband, to now I've got a child, and then you have multiple children. So I think the important thing is, I always want the details to figure out, how am I going to best be present at this event in this way? And then to kind of decide, okay, what is the expectation? So I know what I can say my boundary is. I have a time boundary. Maybe I can only give you 2 hours.
Yeah.
I have a travel boundary. We're not going to drive 3 hours to something, unfortunately, in the peak of LA traffic.
Yep.
That's not going to work for us. So maybe that's even a no-go. You know, food, how are we feeding everybody? Like, just different things like that pop up for me in terms of physically, how am I going to meet my needs? And then I just have a conversation, whether it be with my significant other, about, okay, this is what I'm hearing is the expectation. This is what I can give you.
Yep.
This is what I'm willing to do. Whether or not the individuals on the other line will be okay with that. Like, are you okay in supporting me with the fact that we can only go 2 hours, and that I'm going to be reminding you at 12:30, hey, we got to check out of here. We got to go, as much as possible. And it is unfortunate if the other individuals don't get what they want.
Yeah.
Sometimes you kind of have to sit with the uncomfortability of someone else's emotions.
Yeah.
And you know what? Their emotions may in fact be valid. They may be there, and it's unfortunate that I can't necessarily keep you happy, but that is also going to be something that they're going to have to process through. And I unfortunately can't always be responsible for someone else's reactions. Not that it isn't hard, and not that it isn't difficult, but I think it's also taking a step back and saying, I can only be responsible for me and what mine is. And that's my emotions, my behaviors in all of this.
I love thinking about, okay, the first piece to me knowing what my boundary is comes from understanding what the expectations are. So for this event, right? Like what time does it start and how does that kind of mesh with my family's, you know, my child's nap schedule, and then saying to the person, well, we can get there at noon, but we'll have to leave at 2:30 because we have to be back for nap. And maybe they say, well, can't you just skip a nap? Well, we could skip a nap, but in the long run, it makes things a lot harder. So we're only going to be able to be there until 2:30.
Yeah.
You know, like, I think sometimes people want to push your boundary a little bit, and not maliciously, right? They just want more time with you. They want more time with your child or whatever, but holding the boundary is okay. Mm-hmm. And it may be hard to hold the boundary, right?
Yeah, definitely. You have to sometimes reestablish it multiple times. You have to state it multiple times. You can't just say it once and then hope that it sticks. A lot of times, because now when I think a lot about this too, I think there's also cultural components that kind of get thrown into the mix about time and spending time with your family or spending time together, and that it's just, we just hang out. But sometimes, yeah, that's great, but not when you have younger children. We can hang out when my child is 15 and we can do an all day thing, not a problem. But right now, it's not going to work for me and my family. It doesn't mean that I don't care about you any less or that I don't want to be involved. It just means for me and what's going to happen on my end, we need to make sure that we stick to our schedule.
And one thing that you mentioned earlier, kind of before we started recording, was various phases of life may require additional or changes in the boundary, right? So maybe before you had kids, you didn't really have a boundary about spending time together for a holiday or an event, right? And so your family is used to you being there all the time. They're used to you coming early and helping set up, and they're used to you cooking all the things, and they're used to you staying until, you know, midnight and, you know, drinking and playing cards or whatever that is. And now suddenly you're a party pooper.
Yep.
So let's talk about that, because that's real.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's definitely as you go through different phases of life, different things come up. And as you get older, you also can't hang the way that you used to before.
And they think you're a party pooper, right? Like, I wasn't calling you a party pooper, Tatiana, but more like that's the way your family, you know, your family's like, well, you're no fun anymore.
Yeah. But you know, what's even more not fun is when I'm really tired and cranky and hungry.
Yeah.
And you don't want that version either. So that's why these things, you know, have to be set up this way. And I think that that also leads to conversations, though, that can be had when marriages occur or when a new child is born or a new baby is brought home. And maybe it's the second or third, like all of those things change a dynamic. And it's not to say that things can't, I guess, revert back in some way to kind of having those good times. But sometimes things also need to get put on pause.
Yeah.
I think we've been put on pause for a very long time in this pandemic anyway. So things are, the way we hang out, the way we do things is also shifting. And maybe I think sometimes we also see the benefits of that too.
Yeah.
That we're also actually able to actually take care of ourselves way more than we had ever anticipated, and really see that we really need to take a step back from the hustle and bustle and say, I just need to stay home tonight. I'm perfectly fine cooking my own meal and watching some Netflix and just hanging out. Hey, but doesn't mean that someone else can't maybe come over and hang out too. We're just doing things in a different way now.
Yeah.
And I think that's really what it comes down to, is sometimes we don't like change, but sometimes it's kind of inevitable, unfortunately. And how do we deal with it then?
Yeah. So I can imagine, you know, being in therapy with a client and kind of walking them all the way through this process of identifying areas of their life where they feel fatigue, or they feel kind of run down, or they feel like someone's taking advantage of them. They don't feel like it's fair. You know, those are the kinds of things that people usually kind of feel as they're thinking about what kind of boundary do I need to set. And then walking them through, like writing out exactly what my value is, what my need is, and then how do I communicate that? I think writing things down and having folks kind of see it written down can sometimes empower people to have, you know, these conversations, some of which may be hard.
Oh, definitely. I think there's power in speaking. There's power in writing things down, you know, being able to actually say, oh, I didn't even realize that was my family's expectation.
Yeah.
That it, or that's just something that I feel on my end that I just need to be available all the time, when that might actually not be the case too. Like, you can also kind of combat some of those values and those expectations, because a lot of those are unspoken.
Yep.
In
yep.
a lot of ways. And so sometimes when you start to talk it through, yeah, or definitely write it down step by step in terms of what this means for me in this particular situation, you're really being able to identify all of these different parts of your value system that you didn't really kind of anticipate, that you really knew that they were there, and they just are kind of ingrained into who you are and your daily life and what you do with your family or what you do with your friends or what you do at work. And sometimes, yeah, taking that step back and just putting it down on paper or talking it out is going to be super beneficial for anybody to really kind of take a look at where they're at.
I love that. And I love what you just sort of said, that, you know, most often they're unspoken expectations, right? You walk away from, you know, a situation with someone and you're like, I didn't even know that's how they felt, right? Like, I didn't even know that that was what they thought. I didn't know that that's what they expected me to do. And then we're in conflict, right? You know, mm-hmm. we're like, I'm going to start kind of griping about them, or they're going to gripe about me or whatever. And it's like, if we talk about expectations up front, both of us take time to think about what our boundaries are, we talk through those boundaries, we are just so much less likely to have interpersonal conflict. If mm-hmm. we can do some of those steps, and I'm presenting it like it's easy, and I realize it's not, but thinking about, which areas can I start to set small boundaries? So if you're a person who's listening and you're like, yeah, Beth, I really suck at boundaries. Start with simple, small ones that you can do. It's almost like riding a bike, right? Once you kind of get used to it, it doesn't feel as hard. So start with some easy boundaries first.
Yeah, definitely some simple ones. And I think just taking time to kind of reflect on where you're at, I think, is a huge first step to that. What is going on? Why do I feel so overwhelmed? Why do I feel so tired? Why is this no longer working for me?
Mm.
What can I maybe modify or adjust? And yeah, I recognize that some of the bigger picture things they seem so out of the realm of possibility, but there's a lot of power in just taking one simple step.
Yeah.
One small step. And that kind of can definitely snowball into a long journey of adjusting whatever it is that you feel that you need adjusting at that time in your life, whatever that might look like. So,
and that small step may be finding your own therapist to be able to walk some of this through with somebody else. So I think that's great. Okay. So you and I could talk about this for much longer, and we only really scratched the surface, but I think using those examples was really good and really helpful. I think folks can probably relate to at least parts of those stories. So, okay, Tatiana, tell folks how they can find you, both social, your website, that sort of thing.
Yeah. So right now, I don't have a website up. It's going to be hopefully up and running within the next couple of months, but I am on social media. I am under G_E_T services. I will be practicing under the name Growth and Enlightenment Therapy Services. So that will be launching, like I said, soon. That would be the best way to get in touch with me if there are any other questions. And then I will definitely be posting some more about some boundaries.
I love that. And folks can find me at makewordsmatterforgood.com. And, you know, we'll make sure that we put links to all of your social in the show notes and in our description. Tatiana, I'm so thankful for these examples. I can already see ways that I can kind of apply these both professionally and personally. So thank you for being here. I know folks can walk away with lots of nuggets today. It was just really fun to have a chance to chat.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. Really appreciate it.
And that's another episode of Things You Learn in Therapy. Thanks for listening, everyone. Stay safe. Stay well out there.